That is the hope, right? That we're going to keep pushing and progressing to a point to where we don't have to fight for the right to exist anymore. And it's tough because transgender, third gender, fourth gender is like, it was always recognized as a valid gender, as a valid way of being in many cultures, right? And this has been documented way back in time. This has been, we've always existed, right? It wasn't really until like a lot of the European colonization where we started seeing the eradication of this identity, right? So it is tough because it is an extremely invalidating experience just to live on a regular basis, especially right now in America, because of what we're having to go through. And we don't know whether we're going to lose our health care. And we're also the target of lots of discrimination and violence. So it is a very scary time right now.
I'm Ethan Devitt, and welcome to this 50 Faces Focus series, in which we are celebrating LGBTQ plus professionals in a special series for Pride Month 2023. I'm joined today by Nathan Ortiz, who's an associate DevOps engineer at Red Door Interactive, based in the San Diego area. He previously was a software engineer at TrainSquare, and prior to that was in the US Navy. Welcome, Nathan. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
I want to start by talking about your background and your career journey. Can you tell us where you grew up and what your early interests were?
Yeah, so I grew up in Riverside County, California. It was a pretty rural equestrian area. So I was a very active kid. I had a lot of early interests. So on the physical side, I rode horses, did martial arts, gymnastics, lots of other sports. I also was really into music. So I enjoyed playing piano, percussion, singing. I also really enjoyed writing, which I've gotten to use in my career. So that's also been really exciting. After the Navy, I took some college courses. You know, I tried out a lot of different things and nothing really seemed to fit for me. So I ended up not actually getting a degree. And I did go to college for many years, kind of trying to figure out what I wanted to do. So I ended up in the software development field in a very non-traditional way. So I ended up going to a coding boot camp, which was a very intensive 4 month long boot camp where, you know, I spent 12, 14 hours a day coding and really learning in a sort of work oriented environment. They try to model it based off of what I would experience in the real world. So that was a really, really great experience. And it provided me with the tools and the skills that I needed in order to break into the tech industry.
And can you talk about then your transition? This is obviously part of the Pride series. And I know the work you're doing today is quite focused on inclusion. Can you talk about that experience in your life?
Yeah. So as a kid, I never really understood why I was treated differently. I had the traditional socialization of a young girl, right? So it never really made sense to me. I had always wished that I was born a boy, but I did grow up in a very conservative household, a somewhat religious household. So there were a lot of aspects about myself that I really suppressed for a long time. So I actually didn't end up transitioning until later on in life, until I was 23 years old. So that was about 5 years ago. So the first time I really felt a sense of inclusion or belonging was when I was stationed in San Diego when I was back in the Navy. So there I was kind of introduced to the LGBTQ community. And it wasn't long before I really found myself surrounded. Just all my friends were in the community. And at this point, I hadn't like come out yet or anything. I was still really identifying as a straight woman. But when I found myself in the community, I realized that I felt safe and free to explore who I was. So transitioning isn't something that happened overnight. It wasn't a choice that I woke up one day and I made. It was a gradual process from presenting as a feminine woman to realizing that I was attracted to other women. And then that from there, it kind of went into me being more masculine presenting. And then eventually I was trying out new name and pronouns. And I was starting to feel that this actually fit, you know, and I was surrounded by people who were extremely supportive of me, no matter what I was going through. So the sense of inclusion around that aspect is also a bit complicated. So I experienced the dichotomy of inclusion and exclusion. And I still do in a lot of ways. But what I mean by that is at the time that I was for the first time experiencing inclusion, from the community and from friends. I was also facing exclusion from my family because of their beliefs and the inability to really accept who I was becoming, that I was becoming who I was always meant to be, and that I was really happy doing so. And so it was a tough thing. So I feel like no matter what, there's always that back and forth of there's always going to be this sense of inclusion in one aspect, and then there's going to be exclusion coming from other sides. So at that time, I was working in the service industry. So it was difficult transitioning while working because people see you as one way. So they use the incorrect pronouns and all those sorts of things that happen. So what really made me feel validated and included was when my coworkers would use the correct pronouns. They would validate my gender and who I was. So that's mostly where I got to experience the inclusion.
It's so interesting that you mentioned your first experience of inclusion being in the LGBTQ community in the Navy. Was it actually within the Navy, or was it more in the surrounding geographic area of San Diego around where you were living?
So it was both. I worked with a lot of people who were in the LGBTQ community, and they're the ones that really introduced me to the San Diego community, which is around the Hillcrest area. So, you know, on my time off, I would end up going and spending my time with them, and we would go out to Hillcrest. And that's really where I made these connections with the community, which ultimately, when I was discharged from the Navy, I ended up working at the women's bar that's out there called Gossip Grill. So that was really the starting point to where I just became fully immersed and was surrounded by I was very involved in the community at that point.
It's so interesting. It shows how far we've come, obviously, within a branch of the military like that, to have a formidable community that is fertile and growing. And the other thing I think is notable about what you said is really the power of inclusion. Just, and I know we'll talk about that now in the context of software development, but just how empowering it is to feel inclusion because of your mentioning that this just felt right. So you found what was right yourself, but it's having that inclusive environment that I suppose enables it and allows you to actually give rise to that. So I think it's very important. Could we just move on to talk about then within your current career? Because you mentioned in terms of app development and inclusive design, some of the work that you're doing, and there might be some elements that maybe we're not broadly aware of as a society, maybe some of the small things that can make a difference.
So a few months ago, I joined this group called the San Diego Accessibility and Inclusive Design Group. So it's really a tech-focused group that focuses on inclusion and accessible design in websites and apps. So I gave a talk there not too long ago on creating gender-inclusive forms. And I chose this topic because it does mean a lot to me. Originally, the reason I actually went into software development was because I was so frustrated with using all of these websites and apps that I was completely excluded from. There were points where I couldn't even access a product or a service because of that. So a lot of the issues with creating gender inclusive forms, right, is a lot of people are asking the wrong questions, right? And when you don't really have that perspective or that life experience, people don't know that they're asking the wrong questions. So that's a huge thing that I want people to be aware of in terms of what the difference is between asking gender and the difference between asking sex. There are other aspects where it can just be extremely uncomfortable, especially for transgender people who are experiencing gender dysphoria and are already invalidated on a very regular basis. But receiving that from a website or an app it's a different thing, right? It's very interesting. It's like being excluded from the technology, and that doesn't feel great either. So that's a huge thing that I'm trying to work on to put that perspective out there. And, you know, when I gave that talk, I was really surprised by how engaged everybody was. It led to a really great discussion, even in terms of what data collection looks like when it's based on gender and what that information is going to be used for. So there are some people that approached me after, and they were talking to me about how these are just things they never thought about. And they work in user experience and the design field. So they were really telling me that it was eye-opening, and it's just something that they've never heard before. So I really realized that my perspective just isn't really out there as much. It's just not common. To me, it's just a lived experience, right? So I wasn't even realizing that lots of people just don't know these things. So some of them were asking me if I'd be willing to present on the topic to their companies. And I'm really hoping to get to do some of that, because I do feel like I'm on a mission to just call these things out and make individuals more aware of how we can make websites and apps more inclusive and accessible as well to everybody, including the transgender community. So in my everyday work, I kind of go by a call it out when I see it. I'm not directly involved in the creative design. So when I see something that might not be as inclusive, I do bring that up to my manager and I start having these kinds of conversations with them about how can we do this better? Can we reach out to the creative team and talk about this?
It's so interesting. And you use the word validating a lot. And I know Leo Caldwell, a mutual friend of ours, he also uses that a lot in his LinkedIn posts. And I just wonder, when we're talking about the entire LGBTQ plus community, it seems that certain segments, maybe the T part of that, maybe there's less validation than perhaps maybe gay men, gay women that are presenting and therefore not perhaps needing to be validated. But yet maybe 30, 40 years ago, maybe that was the case. Do you see this as being just a natural evolution that we're all hopeful that validation won't be needed as this becomes more normalized?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, it is very interesting, you know, and we're seeing now with the amount of legislation that's just surrounded around gender affirming care and the amount of it and the extent that it's really affecting transgender individuals. And I do feel like this legislation is really based off of a fear, off of things that aren't actually true. So just lots of false information that's out there. And the way that we have always been portrayed in media, right, in history, has had such a large influence on these types of perspectives on people like us. So I'm hoping, I mean, that is the hope, right, that we're going to keep pushing and progressing to a point to where we don't have to fight for the right to exist anymore. And it's tough because transgender, third gender, fourth gender is like, it was always recognized as a valid gender, as a valid way of being in many cultures, right? And this has been documented way back in time. This has been, we've always existed, right? It wasn't really until like a lot of the European colonization where we started seeing the eradication of this identity, right? So it is tough because it is an extremely invalidating experience just to live on a regular basis, especially right now in America, because of what we're having to go through. And we don't know whether we're going to lose our healthcare. And we're also the target of lots of discrimination and violence. So it is a very scary time right now. And I want to keep pushing, maybe to provide people with a perspective that they've just never thought of, that they don't know, you know, just kind of want to give them the facts and try to create a more supportive space for us to just really even exist. So it's complicated. And I'm hoping that we definitely get there. I think there's just definitely some obstacles that we're gonna have to get through in the next few years.
Well, the work you're doing in terms of inclusion and the work that people like Leo are doing in terms of really raising awareness and really being a voice for those who can't is so powerful. So thank you. So what is the kind of work that you're doing to raise awareness and provide support for other members of the community?
So currently, I'm combining my personal experience and knowledge of software development and design into a useful perspective that others can learn from. So recently, I actually had a realization about accessibility, which is something that I'm very passionate about. Accessibility and inclusion, they go together, right? But with accessibility, especially in web development, there's a set of standardization guidelines called Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. And these were created primarily for individuals who need to navigate the web with disabilities, right? And they face a lot of blockers in doing so. So these set of guidelines, and there's a legal standard, right, based off of these guidelines that websites and apps need to meet, right, in order for individuals with disabilities to access these sites. So what I wanted to talk about was that last year, I think, in 2022, there was a federal court that ruled that gender dysphoria falls under the protection of the Americans with Disabilities Act. And so in 2013, the American Psychiatric Association replaced gender identity disorder which was defined as an incongruence of a person's experienced gender and their gender assigned at birth. They replaced that with gender dysphoria, which recognizes that the problem is not gender incongruence, which is essentially what being transgender is. So they recognize that that's not a disorder. However, there is distress that often comes with that sort of lived experience, and that gender dysphoria can fall under Americans with disabilities. So I was thinking about it, and there's really no set of guidelines. There's no standards for gender or sex in web content. And that's a huge thing because lots of, especially transgender people, are facing, I mean, these types of blocks, right? And it really, what it comes down to is this content is not accessible for them. It's not accessible for us. And so I was thinking, you know, why is that not something that is being talked about more? I think that we should really start these conversations. And it's something that I'm personally wanting to do, is to push for having a set of standards that fall within the WCAG guidelines. So for now, I'm going to be writing more about it, posting about it. At work, we are going to be doing a series about it, blog post series. So I will be posting those on the site in the next few months, and that'll be at reddoor.biz. But yeah, that's something that's super important to me that I just realized. And, you know, I think it's very important that we start talking about that.
That's fantastic. Well, we'll put links to all of that in the show notes. Looking just maybe at some of the affinity groups and support mechanisms that you've seen and used maybe and seen put in place for others, is there anything that you think is particularly impactful?
Yeah, so I do think that having a dedicated group of individuals that can make a meaningful impact is really important. I do take a lot of issue with performative allyship. Sometimes you see a lot of companies where maybe it's Pride Month and they'll do a little event and they'll be like, happy Pride. And that's really the extent of what it goes to, right? But there's no actual work being done. So I think it's important to have a group of people who really believe in doing the work, right? And doing the research, taking stock of the current status of a company and tracking progress, soliciting feedback from their employees, a group that's actually going to take action on concrete issues and areas of improvement. I think that that's much more meaningful and important than just putting on events or making small acknowledgements here and there about marginalized communities. I also think that a focus on culture is really huge. So it's not so much about having events, right? But it's more about creating a safe culture for individuals to contribute their ideas. So, I mean, that really empowers people to do their best work and to also bring their whole selves to work. So I know personally, I probably would not be half as vocal or want to contribute if I didn't feel safe where I worked. So I am very grateful to work at a company that is very, you know, culturally safe and very encouraging of challenging the standards and raising these types of questions.
Absolutely. Well, my next section is the reflection section. And I'd like to maybe tie this to some of your work experience of inclusion. Were there any setbacks or challenges that you learned lessons from, whether at work or elsewhere, that you can share now?
So there was definitely a setback of not having a degree. And I think that that is really related to inclusion, right? So not having a college degree was tough because a lot of companies, they list that as a job requirement and they're not really willing to give other individuals a chance who may not have, who, you know, we don't tick off that box for them. So that was definitely a challenge for me. And the lesson I learned from that was to just kind of leverage my passion, my experience, and the skills that I do have that could address maybe the weakness of not having a college degree. I also think that that sort of requirement is very directly related to inclusion. We had a challenge at work about how can we attract more diverse talent. And it's something that I raised to the president of the company. And I said, look, on our job requirement postings and for internships, one of the requirements is to have a college degree or to be enrolled in college, right, for a lot of the internships. And I basically said, look, a lot of people coming from marginalized communities who have very diverse backgrounds or extremely talented people, they're being blocked, like just immediately right out of the gate. They're not really going to be given a chance. I'm really one of the only ones that doesn't have a degree at the company. So I kind of use myself as an example. You know, I started off as an intern, and from that, I was promoted to getting a full-time associate offer. So I basically stated the case of there's lots of amazing, talented people out there who can contribute to a more inclusive work environment and more inclusive work that we would produce as a whole. So I do really think that we should change the language on that. You know, maybe we can have either you have to have a degree or some sort of equivalent experience to that, right? So that's one instance where I was able to have a little bit of influence in changing the requirements. And so that was really awesome for me to get to witness and experience.
And over the course of your life so far, have there been any particular key people or mentors that have given you that safe space or given you the space to be yourself or that have otherwise made an impression on you?
Definitely. I mean, a lot of them would be friends because with the exclusion that I face from my family, right, I don't really have a relationship with my parents or most of my family. My brother has definitely always been a role model, and he is and continues to be very supportive of me and my transitioning. And he's just always been super great. And I've always really looked up to him because he just holds himself so confidently. And he's done really well for himself in life after college. And he just always puts his family first and stability. And I'm just really always kind of in awe of his professionalism. And he's also very, very intelligent. So he's definitely always been a huge role model for me. But aside from that, most of the influence I have had has come from friends who have really turned into family for me. So these are friends that I've had for many years now, who've always kind of been there for me and supported me. And I do have this one friend who sometimes I don't understand them because they're probably the most empathetic, forgiving person I've ever met. And they've really taught me to not take things so personally, right? Sometimes it's easy to become emotionally riled up over whether it's a situation or just words that were said. And I've learned from them that when people are saying certain things, and they may be hurtful things, offensive, or maybe you just feel like you're forgotten about or not really cared about, depending on the actions that some people take, they've really taught me that, look, just focus on yourself. It's not about you. Whatever actions or things that this person is saying is really kind of just a reflection on themselves and their own beliefs. And it's okay. You can still be forgiving. You can still be open to that person in one aspect or another, right? It doesn't have to influence the relationship you have with that person too much. So that's something that they've also been teaching me more, is just having a little bit more empathy and forgiveness and moving on. So yeah, I would say that they've been super huge in that way.
Well, that's just beautiful that these friends have filled the role of family, extended family, which is wonderful. And my last question is around any word of wisdom, creed or motto or advice that you've been given maybe or have derived on your own that you can share with us here.
Yeah. So I would say that my one sort of key belief is that we're not necessarily fixed in our ways of being. So to me, every moment is an opportunity to be something. And most of the things that we do say about ourselves, the labels and the stories that we've given ourselves, or maybe others have given to us, they're just not true. I used to say that I could never do anything tech related. People have asked, I used to say, you know, I'm just not smart enough, or this profession was not meant for me. So that's how I used to be. And I try to be not that way going forward. So the way that I address that is by, if I do make a statement, right, I will often put yet or for now at the end of it, right? So it might be, oh, I can't do that thing yet, or I don't know about that for now, right? So I kind of like to acknowledge that what I'm feeling or what I'm going through is a temporary state. And that's really helped drive me forward and evolve a lot as a person and being able to pick up new skills and even characteristic traits, right? It's been really huge. And I love to live by that.
Well, Nathan, I think that that's a beautiful place to end this, because this fact that we are all work in progress, I think really underscores your humility, but also your commitment to changing the state of inclusion, not just for yourself, but for so many others in the community. And the work you're doing even if some of the changes are small, I think we'll all, through the law of cumulative effect, be very impactful in every way, small and large. So thank you so much for coming here and sharing your insights with us.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Ethan Devitt. Thank you for listening to our 50 Faces Focus series. If you liked what you heard and would like to tune in to hear from more inspiring professionals and their stories, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, and all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest. I was made to